Hi everyone, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengy. It's been a while since we've done one of these. I'm so happy to be doing it again. I think it's been like 3 weeks, so I'm really sorry about that. We had lots going on, obviously, post-Masters. We've been working on a big data project for GNM Plus members to greatly expand our possibilities with that membership. And so if you're a GNM Plus member, I hope you've been able to take advantage of it. If you're not a GNM Plus member, head over to our website, golfnewsnet.com. Head over to GNM Plus. You can get a sampling of all of the tools that are available to our GNM Plus members. Right now, it's just $10 a year for everything. And then at the end of May, if you're not a subscriber at that point, you'll have to pay the full price for that membership, the GNM Plus Edge membership, which will be $75 for the year. But if you're a GNM Plus member by May 31st, you will have access to all of that stuff through the end of the year for your $10. And then at the end of the PGA Tour season, you'll have an offer to be able to buy that membership moving forward for $50 per year. So a nice little discount on that. And actually, a lifetime membership for both, for the general public and also for GNM Plus members, of a three-year rate, basically. So for $150, if you're a GNM Plus member by May 31st, you will get all of those tools for your lifetime. And then if you're a member of the general public, for $225, you'll have that membership for the rest of your life. Anyway, head over to GNN, check out GNM Plus and GNM Plus Edge. It is, in my very humble opinion, as someone who came up with these fantasy tools and have seen what's in the marketplace, we charge a really cutthroat price for some high quality tools, and there's more coming. So I'm very excited about all of that. We are presented by 2Under. And 2Under are the purveyors of asset management. As we've talked about on this show before, 2Under makes the best darn underwear there is. They make it with their famous Joey pouch, so that for the 80% of you listening to the show that are guys, your assets will be well separated from your body as you get sweaty on the golf course, keep you nice and cool, keep you feeling good. The no-drip tip means you don't have to worry about the leftover from when you have to use the bathroom hitting your clothes, the rest of your clothes. And not only do they make great golf underwear, they make underwear for pretty much every occasion, from sleeping to working out to a night on the town. And it's fantastic. And they also make great loungewear, socks, and there's more coming as well. So head over to 2under.com, the number 2under.com. Use the promo code GNN20. You're going to save 20% on your order, any order, not just your first order, any order. GNN20 is the promo code to use over at 2under.com. I wanted to start by talking about the big news out of the Supreme Court earlier in the week with basically a ruling from the Supreme Court indicating that the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992, also known colloquially as PASPA, is unconstitutional. It violates the 10th Amendment in its nature of telling states that it cannot create sports betting opportunities for its citizens, and regulates that illegally because those powers are not enumerated to the federal government through the Constitution. They are actually enumerated to the states because they're not in the Constitution directly. So that opens the way for states like New Jersey and others which are pursuing this, as many as 20 right now in legislative action, to potentially legalize gambling, sports betting, at a state-by-state level. And there could be some federal action on this as well, to better regulate or more holistically regulate sports betting throughout the United States. But this is a big deal. It's a big change. I mean, for basically 26 years, this country lived under the idea that sports betting may not be legal ever, while our counterparts and friends in Europe and throughout pretty much the rest of the world, the civilized world at least, are able to bet on sports freely, and it's well regulated, and it's pretty much a part of the culture and part of life. And now that will probably start to happen here, and it'll probably start to happen in short order. Monmouth Park, which has already prepared to open a sports book in anticipation of this ruling based on how the Supreme Court hearing went, a lot of the way the questions were asked basically seemed to suggest, telegraph, that this was going to work out in favor of those who want to see sports betting. legalized and regulated and taxed throughout the United States in different states. So Monmouth Park in New Jersey, which is not too far, it's right on the doorstep of New York City, they're going to start accepting bets on May 28th. I don't have an entire picture yet, and I don't think that they've said fully what they're going to accept bets on, but I think you're going to get the four major sports and collegiate sports. I don't know if they're going to do golf out the gate, but I would imagine they would probably do that just because in a few more weeks' time from the 28th, we'll have the U.S. Open on Long Island in the Hamptons at Shinnecock Hills. So there's a big opportunity there for Monmouth Park to figure out what the golf handle will look like. Handle is the amount of money bet, basically. What the golf handle looks like relative to other sports, and whether or not having a sporting event as big as the United States Open in its backyard, basically, brings in people like me who are coming in from out of town, or others just like me, either media or golf fans or otherwise, coming to watch the U.S. Open, whether or not that brings them into town and then brings them to Monmouth Park to drop a few dollars on betting on the U.S. Open. I'm very interested to see that. I think that the PGA Tour, in its previous statements and even this week, has indicated they're okay with regulated sports betting. They had put in a program this year for their players so that they could monitor whether players were betting on themselves or basically colluding to create certain outcomes, shady activity. So that was already in place, in part in anticipation of what was probably going to happen with the Supreme Court. And they would like to see, kind of like some of the other sports leagues would, that the leagues get a kickback, basically. The leagues and maybe even players, what's dubbed the integrity fee. Some kind of portion of the take the state would get, each state would get from sports betting, kicked to them for, I guess, basically no reason other than they want money. And they feel it's their right to be able to have a share of the sports betting money because they put on the sports events, which I think is absolute hogwash. It doesn't work that way in Europe. It's never going to work that way in Europe, and it probably will not work that way here. Now, basically, states are going to kick all of these organizations to the curb and go, yeah, we need the money. We got crumbling roads and bridges and schools that need to be fixed. We don't really care about your already rich players. And that's just how it's going to work out. And that means the PGA Tour will probably not get what they want out of all of this, but they do have some opportunities. Even if they don't get the integrity fee, they could go one route and create their own company, basically a subsidiary of the PGA Tour or an offshoot, you know, whatever legal term it is, and create their own sports book. They could do that. I mean, the leagues can do this. Why would they not? They have the infrastructure in place. They have either the arenas or the venues, depending on or stadiums, to have betting while you're there. And then they can, at a PGA Tour event, you could have tents all over the place, all over the golf course, to be able to bet, have a betting window, and that's it. And I think that would work out actually pretty well for the PGA Tour, because if they combine the traditional kind of sports betting, you know, matchups, wins, all that stuff, with the development of live betting, so betting on whether Tiger Woods will hit the first fairway, whether Phil Mickelson will hit the 17th green at Sawgrass, whether this putt's going to go in, all that stuff, they could put that right in their app, or create a separate app, probably be more likely, and they could rake in the money that way. I mean, there are a load of possibilities for revenue for the PGA Tour. Where that revenue goes is an entirely other question. Does it go to the players? Then they're basically their own integrity fee. That would make some sense. Does it go to charity, which I think would be kind of interesting, actually, trying to operate your own sports book and giving part of the profit to charity. It might incline more people to bet, kind of like playing the lotto. You're like, oh, well, it goes to fixing roads or schools or whatever. Here's another $5. No, I'm not going to win. Might be interesting that way. And I see that maybe 2 to 3 years into the future. I get the sense that we're probably a couple of years away from that reality, and that the frontier is really starting to open. So with Monmouth Park on May 28th, we'll get a sense of what legalized betting looks like in North New Jersey and in that part of the United States. We already know what it looks like in Las Vegas, but I think that's a slightly distorted version of it because so many people who come to Vegas do so to kind of have a vacation. I mean, the sports betting handle is like 2% of the actual action in Vegas, total money bet. It's not that much. And part of that is because most people are not used to betting on sports. And there's an estimated $150 billion out there bet illegally on sports through bookies, offshore books, all kinds of things. And so you're going to bring more and more of that to light. You're going to bring more and more of that to the public light where it can be taxed and where profits can be taxed, both ways, by the way. So the winners are the books, who always eventually win, the states, who get more money, and potentially the tours or the sporting leagues, where you can have money coming in, either running your own book, or if you somehow con these states to have an integrity fee, then that too. And as the PGA Tour, they'll figure out what the best path for them is, but I think in terms of the total betting handle, you know, not lots of people bet on golf. It's just the reality of it. Most people bet their money on football, then basketball, then baseball, then hockey. Then you kind of get into golf. And there's a lot of room for that to change because it'll just be available. And I think that will bring at least some more people, some additional number of people to watch PGA Tour golf week to week. Maybe the LPGA, maybe the European Tour, don't know, but probably the PGA Tour at a minimum, and that'll be good for the sport. There is an interesting downside to this that Randall Mell raised for Golf Channel, thinking that there could be, not collusion, but a form of it, I guess, by a bettor in a situation where there's the money on the line. You have to make sure that bettor, who could influence the outcome of the tournament by shouting, get in the hole or distracting the golfer, that doesn't happen. And I would be shocked if that never happened. I think that's the reality of it. But I also don't think, as we saw at the Honda Classic, that someone has to have money on a player to be encouraged or motivated to say something negative or impact the tournament. I mean, think about the guy that got Justin Thomas coming down the stretch. He didn't have any money on the tournament as far as we know. He just didn't want Justin Thomas to win. He wanted Luke List to win or someone else to win. Didn't like Justin Thomas. So I don't think just because all of a sudden people can have win tickets in their pocket or on their phone that that's going to necessarily mean fan behavior gets worse. I mean, I'm someone who has bet on sports before, and when I'm at a sporting event that I have a ticket on, I don't all of a sudden decide, you know, I'm going to yell something to try to influence the event. I don't think most sports bettors think of it that way. And frankly, most sports bettors that are big bettors that would be in a position to be really negatively impacted by the turn of events that are natural to a golf tournament, they're probably not going to be there in person. They're going to be at home somewhere betting on it, or in Las Vegas, or at a resort. Or, you know, they're not going to be at the tournament. So my general view is that while Randall has a point, I think that it largely works out to be an unfounded potential source of misery for the PGA Tour and its players. I just don't think that's going to be an issue. So in the end, I mean, I'm obviously pro-gambling. I'm pro-betting. I'm pro-responsible decision-making. Also, above all else, I'm not pro-reckless gambling or reckless decision-making. You got to know what you're getting into. You have to understand how to live within your means. You need to be able to know your limitations. You need to not make bad decisions when you've been drinking. I'll give you a great example. My wife and I, we went to Ogle Bay Resort in West Virginia. We went there to go play golf for a few days, play golf Thursday, late evening, and then Friday morning. Stayed Thursday night. The place was great. We'll do a write-up about it for Golf News Net. It's actually pretty cool within the West Virginia state park system. They have resorts like Ogle Bay, Stonewall Jackson's another we've been to and like. And anyhow, so on Friday, my parents-in-law came down, got our kids, took them with them to their house in just outside of Latrobe, Pennsylvania. My wife and I went into Pittsburgh. And we went and had some beers, went to a couple of great breweries. Grift House was awesome. East End Brewing Company was awesome. So if you're in Pittsburgh or thinking about going somewhere for a beer trip, try Pittsburgh. They got Church Brew. I mean, they've so many other breweries in other parts of town. Church Brew Works is one of my favorite places in the world. It is literally a Catholic church that has been turned into a brewery because they don't use it anymore for church. It's amazing. Then you've got Permanente Brothers, all the food on the strip. I mean, anyhow. So we ate and drank before we went to the Pirates game that night. Andrew McCutchen was coming back in town. He had been traded away from the Pirates to the San Francisco Giants. This was the first time he was going to be back in Pittsburgh since being traded. And we went to that game. He got an amazing ovation multiple different times. I mean, it was actually kind of touching. And I'm not someone who really roots for Pittsburgh sports. But the community's connection to all of their sports teams is something I kind of envy. And anyhow, we were at the game and we were inebriated. And I kind of joked to my wife, well, let's go to the casino. This game's getting boring because the Pirates are winning. It was at hand. And she's like, okay, let's go over to the Rivers. I was like, no. Like, no, I'm kidding. We're not doing that. I'm drunk. If I play blackjack, I will get too aggressively bad decision making. So I think people who, not everyone's going to have that control, that restraint. I understand that. But it needs to be regulated, especially if there's going to be on-site gambling that could happen, by the PGA Tour to know, all right, if you're an inebriated person, we're not going to let you bet. If you look like you're distraught, you're not going to be allowed to bet. And you need to have those controls in place and that training in place to know when someone shouldn't be betting and to put your arm around them and say, just don't do it today, maybe next time. So that will be something to look out for. And that'll be something we have to care about in the general population. But more broadly speaking, I'm all for sports betting. I think it's about darn time. And frankly, to come with it should be online poker. That is a game of skill. And I would like to see that legalized for online play and see if that can't be a little bit of a moneymaker for states as well. But that's an entirely different podcast, not one I run. So I'll stick to golf for the second half of the show. I want to take a minute and tell you about my friends at TJ Premier. We've had Josh Jacobs on the show recently. He's the founder, and they're celebrating 15 years of helping kids where they are play sports. They've been involved in golf and tennis, now involved in team sports, and they have a great curriculum not only around learning sports but also integrating that into their education, into what they're learning in their schools through STEAM. So instead of science, technology, engineering, and math, it's now science, technology, engineering, art, and math. But you can have an opportunity to own a sports franchise of your own. Through TGA Premier Sports, you can own your own franchise-based sports business while working with children where they work and play. As a TGA Premier Sports franchise owner, you'll run after-school programs, camps, parent-child events, and leagues, available in a variety of sports, as we mentioned, including golf, tennis, and the team sports, volleyball, ultimate frisbee, lacrosse, floor hockey, flag football, and cheerleading. TGA got its start in the golf industry, but has since branched out into these other sports, and they have done so majestically. It's been really cool to hear from Josh what they've been able to accomplish in these team sports as they continue to grow. With a proven, research-backed curriculum and a wealth of tools to offer, a turnkey business solution, TGA Premier Sports blends the fun and excitement of working in youth sports with a unique opportunity to develop a community-based business for a relatively low investment, by the way. And most frequently, based on what I've seen and what I know of Josh's business, more often than not, these franchises that you get for a relatively low amount of money, you know, the $30,000 range, they come in basically a triple the price when you sell it. That's a pretty good deal. And for a lot of folks, this is an opportunity to own a business that you can pass along to your children, that you can create jobs in the community, you can have a side hustle if you want, something to just build value on for your legacy. I mean, a variety of different reasons to do it. But head over to TGA.com/franchising, or if you want something a little bit easier to remember, FranchiseTGA.com. So PlayTGA.com/franchising or FranchiseTGA.com. One more time, FranchiseTGA.com. To find out more about franchising. And then you can actually contact the folks at TJ Premier. They will get you all set up with information, give you a better idea of what it takes to get started with the TGA Premier Sports franchises, whichever sport or sports you choose. It's a pretty easy onboarding process, and I firmly believe in the mission that they're doing, not only in terms of helping to get more people at a grassroots level, at a non-white-collar level involved in these kinds of sports, but also just to help improve the lives of children through education and sports together. The power of sports is so remarkable, in my opinion, and to be able to have a hand in that through a TJ Premier Sports franchise would be just remarkable. All right, so on the second half of the show, we've got a really interesting course this week on the PGA Tour. The AT&T Byron Nelson moved from the Four Seasons Resort in TPC Las Colinas, which was a DA Weibring Jam, and they moved from there, basically on the other side of town in Dallas, to a relatively new private golf club called Trinity Forest Golf Club. It opened a couple of years ago. It's a Core Crenshaw design. So if you're a golf architecture geek, you know what that means. It's almost certainly to be a top 100 golf course in the United States, if not a top 125 golf course in the United States. Bill Core and Ben Crenshaw have, in my view, never done a bad job. They just bring it every time. I mean, you know the hallmarks of a Core Crenshaw course before you get there. It is minimalism, a lot of scrub, a lot of sand, wide fairways, lots of playing areas, lots of decision-making where you can pick aggressive angles over more conservative ones, big putting surfaces that don't necessarily tell you the actual usable area, but big putting surfaces to inspire confidence. They have lots of undulation, and the way that they're created, they can be used to create pins that force players to play away from pins to get close to holes, which I think is really interesting. It's not just blind fire at the pin golf. There's a lot of strategy involved. The greens typically run really well, true and quick. So do, frankly, the fairways. I've played Sand Valley. Last August was my real first experience with Core Crenshaw in person, playing it. Played four rounds. On the Sand Valley course, one at the to-be-open Mammoth Dunes, which is going to be, it's going to be so good when it's open and full. But I had so much fun playing a Core Crenshaw course because I had to make a decision on every shot. And not that you don't in golf. I mean, regularly speaking, I mean, my Argyle Country Club, I make a decision every hole, every shot. I'm making decisions, but it seems more holistic than what I do at Argyle, in that you have to kind of consider how you're going to play the hole from the green back to the tee box and then execute. And if you do that, you have a chance to score well. And if you don't, then you can probably make par and bogey on a lot of holes without a whole lot of issue. And this is different. I mean, this style of golf is, frankly, different than what's out there on the PGA Tour from week to week. Most weeks on the PGA Tour, guys have seen these venues a lot of times before, so they know how they play, or they can talk to their peers and pretty quickly discern how a venue plays. And when that happens, you know, you go to a new venue, you're subject to criticism because players don't know what to expect. And if it's kind of out of whack with what they have seen on the PGA Tour, then they're prone to complain. They like firm and fast at specific times. They like firm and fast for the major championships, basically. The rest of the year, no thank you, other than maybe Players and Firestone for the last time in August. That's it. The rest of the year they want not soft, but not so fast that it runs through the fairway. They want, I'm going to hit this nice drive here. I know it's going to roll to here. It's going to be great. I'm going to hit this shot into there. It's going to hold it. It's going to stick it close. It's going to be great. That's not going to be the case this week at Trinity Forest. You're going to hit good shots that go through the fairway or run into a bunker, or they're going to roll through the green, or they're going to stay on the green but they're going to roll 90 feet away. There's a 35,000 square foot double green with 4 and 11, so it's going to be an eye-catching, eye-opening course for a lot of guys that maybe aren't architecture nerds, but it will be really fun to watch on TV. I can almost guarantee that. And the early reaction on Thursday as we're recording this has been very positive, at least for the TV audience of trying to watch this. So I am curious how the players will react having played tournament rounds there as opposed to practice rounds. Guys like Jordan Spieth, whose teacher Cameron McCormick teaches out of Trinity Forest, they practice. He practices there routinely. Bo Hostler does. Hunter Mahan does. Sergio Garcia has been there a number of times, even though he lives in the Austin area with his wife and daughter. So there's some professional-grade experience, professional-grade knowledge of this golf course. I hope it goes well. I mean, above all else, you don't want a calamity. You don't want what happened to Chambers Bay, where they mistimed growing the greens in, and then there were no grass on the, was no grass on the greens. You don't want something like Erin Hills, where it's perceived to be too easy, even though it played to a par 72. So really, it wasn't that easy. It just seemed that easy because there was no wind and nothing to stop it because of the rain. So you want it to go kind of down the middle. Like, keep it in good shape. Don't make it to the player's feeling of unfairness, which is different than probably ours, but nonetheless. And make sure that you get a good winner. Because if you get a dud winner, the players are going to be like, well, that's what this course produces, because they don't sometimes think that way, think the proper way. So I am very excited to see this. I don't think all of a sudden, even if Trinity Forest is successful, that other PGA Tour events, especially the ones, I mean, play the TPCs, you're probably not going to get away from that, but because it doesn't cost the PGA Tour anything to play on them. But I don't think you're going to suddenly see other events pop up and go, oh, okay, well, we're going to go play a Core Crenshaw or Doak or Hants. I mean, Hants designed the closest you got. It's TPC Boston. And unfortunately, this is the last year for that event. So we're not going to be seeing a whole lot of Gil Hants lately. Basically, every time a Gil Hants jam gets on the PGA Tour, that event gets canceled. Doral canceled. TPC Boston canceled. It's not a good track record for Gil Hants, unfortunately. But even with a weak field, I did mention some of the top players in the field. You do have Spieth, Garcia, Adam Scott, Mark Leishman, Matt Kuchar, Billy Horschel's defending champion. You got some other top 50 players, Satoshi Kodaira, Brandon Grace. But really, you only have like seven top 50 players in the field. Everyone else is kind of taking the week off after the players. Part of that is the players, because it's an $11 million tournament. And a lot of the top names went and played Wells Fargo the week before, and most top players these days prefer not to play more than 2 weeks in a row, sometimes 3 weeks in a row, but you'd be hard-pressed to find them four in a row. So a lot of guys, even the guys that played a week before Wells Fargo in New Orleans, even if that's a team event, they're thinking, all right, I'm kind of gassed, I'm going to be at home. So that's part of it. The other part of it is they're apprehensive about a new venue. So I think if things go well this year for this tournament, it's going to be moved. It's going to be the week before the PGA Championship next year. So it'll be curious to see how many players choose to play this event, because it will be in direct contrast to next year's PGA Championship venue, which is Bethpage Black. I mean, it can't be more different. They're both tremendous golf courses, but it could not be more different in terms of how they're designed. I mean, Tillinghast made Bethpage Black an absolute punisher, and that's not what Trinity Forest is designed to be. So will players skip it knowing they're not going to get all that much intel and all that much in-game experience of being at a PGA Championship venue when they know they're going to be in Texas with much warmer weather likely, much firm and faster fairways, maybe greens too, depending on the weather conditions. I mean, you look at the weather this week in New York on Long Island, it's in the mid-60s, high-60s, low-70s, rain, dreary, ugly. That's no guarantee next year at this time that's going to be the weather, although I don't expect there to be a sudden heat wave and the PGA Championships played in 80-degree weather. I think it's going to be a 70-degree major next year. Maybe rainy, maybe not, but it's not going to be perfect golf weather. It's going to be kind of like San Francisco weather, I think. And it'll be interesting to see if players, even if they get a positive review, generally speaking, as a cohort for Trinity Forest, whether or not they choose to take a week ahead of the soon-to-be second major of the year and decide to go play this Core Crenshaw design. Now, this place isn't going to host it forever. by every indication I've been given by friends who know or are aware of kind of what the club's intentions are, they want to drive some memberships, not a lot, but some, and then they kind of want to get out of the way. Maybe host a major championship in the future. Maybe that could happen, especially if the PGA of America does move its headquarters, as is rumored to do, from West Palm Beach, Florida, into Plano, Texas. So then you'll be getting into the DFW, and all of a sudden Trinity Forest looks like a major championship golf course. So I'll be interested to see how that all works out, but again, that's way in the future. Either way, watch it this week. I think you will really enjoy watching it. It is a different brand of golf than what you see on the PGA Tour week to week, and frankly, we don't really see anything like it in competitive golf, except in like November when Golf Channel shows the Australasian PGA Tour and the Australian Open and the Australian PGA. And unfortunately, we don't have the Talisker Masters anymore, but if we had that, you know, basically sandbelt golf, really firm, really fast, lots of fun, lots of decision-making, classic golf. That's what you're going to see this week. And you're going to see it with a cool American style on a place that literally has no trees, on a former landfill capped with clay. And so these guys are playing on trash, mounded trash this week. It's pretty wild when you think about all that a golf course could come out of something that ugly. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Many thanks to you for listening. If you catch us through the Apple iTunes product, through the podcast app or iTunes on your desktop, whatever it is, head over to our show page, the 19th Hole Golf Show. Please give us a 5-star review. It helps us reach more people, as always. We've got more news coming. We're going to have a new podcast with our friend Ann Liguori. She's a legend in New York sports and in the New York golf scene and frankly, national golf. But we're going to have a podcast coming forth with her, so you'll hear about that on the website next week. And then we'll try to make this a little bit more regular thing. I've kind of said to myself throughout the full year, you know, I'd like to do this on a week-to-week basis, but the most important thing is to get through building the website, building Golf News Net for the first half of the year. And this is, as many of you may know, this is my first year running Golf News Net as a business on my own, as my only job. It's a scary endeavor, but there's a lot that goes into it. And so far, we've been really successful with this game plan, but I wanted to get to kind of the midpoint of the year and then return my attention to this show, because for a couple of years we really haven't done this show, not a wrong way, but we haven't done it as well as we could have. And I want to be able to have conversations with people, either professional golfers, teachers, journalists, friends I've made through this game, through Twitter, through golf, and have a good time, not just me and you talking, well, me talking and you listening for 32 minutes at a time. So that's my vow, that's my hope in June, July, and forward, that we'll start getting back to the guests that really made this show something special back when I started it 16 years ago, which is unbelievable to say. But that's my promise to you. So if you have certain guests that you want to hear from, and I don't mean like Tiger and Phil, we can't get them yet, but if you have interesting people you just want to hear from, reach out to me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. You can hit Golf News Net on Twitter, at Golf News Net. Or you can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Always love to hear your thoughts and comments on the show. I want to interact with you. That's why I do this. All right, until next time, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.